In this episode of the Renovation Radio podcast, nationally renowned speaker Steve Richmond teaches us that knowledge is not power. Renovation Radio, because we're all a work in progress.
Steve Richmond, welcome to Renovation Radio.
Thank you much, Mr. Hammond. How are you this beautiful, beautiful day?
Hey, as I always say, it's a great day to be alive.
Absolutely. As I always say, I love being me.
You should. You should love being you because you are you. You know, that's important to wake up and be you.
For sure. So what are we chatting about today? Where's your brain? Come on, let's get this rolling.
Well, absolutely. So I've heard you speak a bunch of times. You're an amazing speaker. I really enjoyed your stuff. I always take good notes. And I want to talk about habits. But before we do that, we talk about good habits and bad habits and how to make habits stick. But let's talk about you for a second. So how did you get into the mortgage business?
I tripped into it. I was a litigation attorney for 4 years. I hated every single day of it. I had a friend of mine who was in the mortgage business, and he flat out said to me, he goes, "Man, you can sell anything to anybody. How much you don't like your job? How much do you make?" I said, "This is what I make." It goes, "Here's a 10% raise." Boom, I'm in the mortgage business. That's literally how it started. I sat down with him. He had his own office. He goes, "Sit at the same desk with me, see what I do, understand this." And it didn't take me that long to pick up the mortgage business. I believe this about business. It's really about the language that you use. I mean, being a lawyer isn't that hard, except we happen to use words like res ipsa loquitur, and all of a sudden, you're, "Oh, what does that mean?" Okay, well, you know, we use words like escrow and servicing. What does that mean? So once you, DTI, LTV, once you get over the language barrier, then you're in that industry. And just flowing along with that. So I'm in the mortgage industry, and then I start working for a mortgage insurance company, a great company, got nothing bad to say about them whatsoever. And I was just sort of like watching it saying, we're starting to get a bit commoditized here and everybody's doing it the same way. So I had a feeling, well, let's try and do it a little bit different. Maybe we can just go out there and start doing some keynote addresses and talking at conferences and doing some sales training, and you bake in the product. So the product was sort of a tag along. See, everybody talks about value add, right? And they say, "Oh, well, here's my product and here's the value add." I'm like, "Here's the value add, and now let me talk about the product," right? So I sort of flipped it in order because I figured people were more interested in the value add than necessarily the product.
No, that makes perfect sense. So you were, I guess, known for being that MI guy, right? So you, when you first started working with GE, I guess it was probably Jimaco in the beginning, right? Then became Jim Worth, and now it's called Enact or something like that, I think.
Right. It was GE Mortgage Insurance. Then it was Genworth Mortgage Insurance. Now it's Enact Mortgage Insurance.
So I had it right. So when you first went to GE, to Jimaco, what was your role?
Business consultant. So they have a phenomenal department that was called At the Customer, For the Customer, ACFC. Mm-hmm. And basically we went in and we would do process re-engineering for different lenders across the country. That's the easiest way to describe it.
Gotcha. Like Six Sigma kind of stuff. Easy to
We say, were right? Deep into the Six Sigma, my friend. I got fishbone diagrams, all that good stuff right there.
So how many yellow sticky notes do you own?
Well, I'm laughing because we actually didn't use yellow sticky notes. We didn't. No. I'll tell you. We actually used white index cards, a Sharpie marker, yep. And there was a special type of 3M tape that would stick to the wall but would never leave any residue, because before I got there, somebody did it with regular tape and it pulled tape or wallpaper off the wall. They're like, "Oh my gosh, we can't pay for all these walls." And the pads, the sticky pads, they don't work because they would just start falling off after a minute of time. So we would use this 3M tape. I mean, I know I'm going deep into the woods, but I guess that's the point. You figure out what works and then you stick with it.
I love it. So if you had to, and this doesn't have to be an exact measure, but if you had to guess, how many keynotes speeches have you given in your career?
Well, those are two different things, right? So when I was doing that process reengineering, I did that for maybe 2-3 years, and people would say things like, hey, we need a speaker for lunch, or we need a speaker at our sales meeting. Do you have anybody? I was like, I can do that. And our CEO was like, no, you can't. I'm like, can we try it once? And after that, he's like, all right, keep on doing it. So I've spoken now in every state in the United States of America. I've spoken to over 400,000 mortgage and real estate professionals. At my high time, I was doing about 180 gigs a year. I was getting burnt out. I won't deny that, 180. I'm looking at my screen right now, and there's a picture of Eddie Murphy on there wearing his cowboy hat. I guess that's from the movie 48 Hours.
Absolutely is. And there's a story behind that.
Big old eyes going, what? Right? And that 180 was a lot. I mean, we're just talking, right? So you know who Karl Rove is?
I do.
So if you don't know who Karl Rove, you do, but if anybody's listening and you don't know who Karl Rove is, he's a Republican strategist, I guess is the best way to say that. And I was on an airplane, and during those days, I was flying basically every single day. So I'm sitting there first class, and guess who I'm sitting next to in first class? Karl Rove, the guy who's like basically running the government for the Republicans, right? And sure, there was a Republican president at the time and whatever. So really weird sitting next to this highfalutin politician. I mean, when I say highfalutin, I'm not saying anything negative, but when you go to look at, hey, what movie am I going to watch on my computer? You're going, ooh, I better make sure that it's not like a slapstick comedy. I'm sitting next to a bigwig. So I'm looking over his shoulder, and I'm seeing he's writing an article for whatever newspaper, opinion, whatever he's putting down there. And I see these famous people's pictures on it and what he's saying about them and whatever. So we land, and I just said, hey, look, I didn't want to bother you during the flight. I just want to say it was nice to meet you. I just wanted to shake your hand. He's like, yeah, but I heard you on the phone saying to me, he goes, what do you do for a living? I said, oh, well, you know, I'm a professional speaker. And he goes, I do a lot of professional speaking. I said, I know you do, Mr. Rove. I said, how many gigs do you do a year? He goes, I'll do maybe like 20. I said, I do about 180. And he sort of looked at me like, oh, my. So, yeah, I burnt out a little bit on it. I won't deny that.
That's a lot, 180. That's a lot of plane trips, especially if you're including all 50 states, which I'm assuming means Alaska and Hawaii. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Wow, that's awesome. Well, I've heard you speak several times. I've had you speak for clients in the past too. You probably, since you've done so many, may not recall any of those, but I always enjoyed your talks. I always got something out of them. In the moment,
I remember you very well, Mr. Hammond.
I always sit in the front, always take good notes. You know. Ask really tough questions, embarrass the speaker, you know, that kind of stuff.
Last time you saw me, you were sitting in the front. On my side, you were on my left-hand side. So I was on your right-hand side. You were about two rows back. We were in Florida. I remember.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So you have a good memory. So, but one of the things that I think that I struggle with, and I think a lot of people struggle with, is so you hear a great keynote speech like yours, always are. And then you hear a good idea, you take good notes. And then when you get back to your market or back to your office or back to your marketplace or whatever, you don't do anything different. And, you know, I'm curious in with all of your experience in this, you know, have you seen things that people do well with this in terms of how they, I mean, maybe good examples or good stories of, or maybe a good best practice on, you know, how do you, is it really, we're talking about behavior change. You know, you hear something new, you hear a good idea, you want to do more business, you want to add more value, as you talked about earlier, you want to, you know, make the world a better place, whatever it is. How do folks take that and put it into practice?
Well, let me put that into a couple terms there. First and foremost, people always ask me, they're saying, well, how can you say, give a presentation that's similar when you did it in one place and now you're going to do it in another place? The answer is exactly what you just said. Everybody listens to it and says it's great, but it's not going to change anything unless they do what? Unless they do something about it, right?
Right.
So one, it's all the same information that's going out there. It's what you, is knowledge power.
Is if you use it right. I mean, like your cell phone.
Exact knowledge is not power. Power is derived from how you leverage your knowledge. Power is derived from how you leverage your knowledge. So we can put as much knowledge out there as we want, but if nobody's going to do anything about it, guess what? It really doesn't make anything happen. So I put it sort of into a three-step process. One, when you're listening to a speaker, always don't just listen for the knowledge, listen for the action item. So when they say, 33% of all purchases are first-time home buyers, right? That's okay. The knowledge. So what's the action item? All right, if one out of three of all purchases are first-time home buyers, I should go after first-time home buyers, right? So always be thinking of what action item am I hearing from the speaker? Then number two, tweak that action item to you, right? So when the speaker says, okay, what I want you to do is I want you to go on Facebook and I want you to post this. And you're like, well, I'm not on Facebook, but I'm on Instagram and I have 5,000 followers on Instagram. Take what they're saying and tweak it so that it's personal to you, right? So number one, look for the action. Two, look for the action as to how it applies to you. And number three, and quite honestly, I probably think this is the most important one, don't try to do everything at once. So if you walk away with seven nuggets of, okay, here's seven action items I have to take, do not try and take seven action items, change your whole system in one day to hit those seven. For week one, try one or two, see if it's working or not working and how you have to tweak it. Then make those changes, then add habit number three, then add habit number four. Oh, look at that. Habit number three is not working. Then drop habit number three and then add number five. I'm not sure exactly how clear that was, but when you look at somebody and give them, I mean, think about, did you see Maverick?
The new one. Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
I did.
Top Gun Maverick, right? Yeah,
sure.
So the wonderful, wonderful Maverick comes walking in, right? Tom Cruise, he's now going to be the trainer and they all have to listen to him, right? Remember that scene? The very sure. first time they see him when he's in the hangar?
Sure.
And he's got a book that looks like, well, from my old age, if we got any Gen Zers, you know, what the yellow pages are, but it looks a book that's as thick as the yellow pages or a dictionary, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And he says, you see all this, throw it out. That's sort of how I look at it. If you go, oh my God, there's all these things I have to do. You become overwhelmed. And what are you going to do? You're going to run back to do what you've always done because that's just too much change too quickly. Mm. Instead, find it one or two things at a time. Try those one or two things. Did it work? Did it not work? Get rid of what doesn't work and keep adding additional things slowly so that it does become part of your regular routine. But if you try and put 20 things in place at one time, guess what? You haven't established a routine. And how can you figure out which one's actually having an effect or not? And then you're overwhelmed. You go right back to where you started.
That's golden. So I'm gonna summarize some of what you just said, put it in my words a little bit.
Did I talk too much there, buddy?
No, not at all. No, it's better that you're talking and I'm asking questions. I need to be listening. So, first off, you said knowledge is not power. Did I hear you right?
Knowledge is not power. It's how you leverage your knowledge is where you derive your power.
Yeah, that's huge. That may be the title of this episode is knowledge is not power, but we'll move on. So Steve Richmond's three-step process. Number one, listen for the action item. First-time home buyer in your example. Number two, make it personal. Make it about you. So it's something you'll actually do, hopefully. And then don't try to do it all.
Skill set, right.
Yep. And then don't do it all at once. So I'm actually going to, you actually, your example of first-time home buyer made me think of something, you know, and especially in the times now with a little higher interest rates and not as much inventory, you know, and not a lot of deals going on right now as we're recording this in November of 2022. And so loan officers are a lot of times are complaining about being slow. And so one of my go-to moves is, you know, I learned this, you know, just being on the street in clients' offices is I would oftentimes run into insurance agents calling on the same companies that I was calling on. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times loan officers were complaining about, you know, these insurance agents come by, they drop off a calendar, they drop off a sticky pad, pins, whatever, and they don't, and they're just looking for that. They're asking for deals. They want to, you know, give quotes. And I'm like, well, did you ever think about asking one about their rental insurance portfolio? And they're like, well, why would I do that? You know, and it's like, well, how much is a rental insurance premium? $17 a year or something like that. How much is homeowners insurance? You know, wouldn't those folks like to turn those renters into, you know, home buyers? And maybe you do a first time home buyer seminar, right? So I think that probably covers all three of your steps there in one little example. You know, the action item, you've got this annoying insurance salesperson in my office. You know, turn the tables on them with it and ask them a question, make it personal because hey, they're there. And then don't do it all at once. Just try one. Go do one first-time homebuyer seminar with one insurance agent and see if it works, right? That's easy.
Can I flip it just a little bit or even build on that? Because this is what we want to do, right? We always want to then personalize it. So I talk about you need to be a spider. Why? Because you have a web and you're trying to capture your customers in a web. Well, what are your focal points? What are your points of strength on your spider web? Well, usually, you know, for a spider, it's the tree that's attached to the limb that's attached to the leaf that's attached to the brick at the house, the brick to the gutter, right? And that's how the spider web takes its shape. Well, your focal points as an originator is going to be what? Well, you have a real estate agent, you have your social media, you have your existing customers, you have your builders, you have your attorneys, right?
Sure.
So, and everybody goes, oh, so are you saying that I should go call on attorneys? No, I'm saying you got to build what? Find your focal points. These are just examples. You just told me, well, how about the insurance agent who does that? Boom. You did exactly what I said. You said, okay, I see the action item, but I'm going to personalize it because I see all these insurance agents coming into my office. What do you do? I'm not going after an attorney. I'm going to go after the insurance agent. You just did exactly what we're talking about.
That's cool. That's cool. So I think I actually learned something here. That's great. And I took notes.
Can I do one other quick thing here?
Absolutely. Absolutely, Steve.
And I know I'm going to go back to this knowledge and learning. First off, if you want to learn something, the best way to learn something is to practice. Well, not really, because if you're doing my loan, I hope that you're not practicing. I would really hope that you've already learned it before. Sure, so I always say the best way to learn something is you learn it to teach it. See, now I understand my product. Now I should be on Facebook. Okay, so you should be good enough that you can teach Facebook to somebody, right? If that's what your plan is, you got to know it so well that you can answer the product. Hey, what about me? I'm a part-time logger that comes out of Canada and I'm only paid on Tuesdays. Can I qualify that income? Well, if you're going after that self-employed borrower, what happens? You should know everything about self-employed borrower. Learn it to teach it. Drive, because depth beats breadth. So you want to go deep with everything as opposed to going really wide out there. Goes right back to what we were already talking about. Don't try and do seven things at once and do them halfway. Find the one thing that you want to try first and go really deep with it so that you know what you're doing. And then you can make more of a calculated decision as to what's going to happen next.
Now that's huge. That's huge. And so you're actually reminding me of several things. My old boss used to always say, explain it to me like I'm 4 years old or 5 years old. I can't remember exactly. And I think that's a famous Albert Einstein quote or something like that. I remember maybe you don't really understand something unless you can explain it to a five-year-old or a four-year-old. I can't recall exactly who said it, but I think it may have been Einstein.
No, it's a very famous quote. The reason I don't like it, and that's why I say learn it to teach it, is because if you talk to your customers as if they're a four-year-old or a five-year-old, they're going to get offended. See, when I say learn it to teach it, it's not just what a four-year-old means. It's somebody with qualified knowledge of whatever it is. So you have to be people. The reason they hate public speaking is because they're always afraid that they're going to get the question on stage that they're not going to be able to answer. And if they can't answer it, they're going to say, oh my gosh, I'm going to look like I'm a fraud and I don't know what I'm talking about. So if you learn it to teach it, you've thought about all the potential questions that can come to you on that topic so that if it ever does, yes, you can answer it. But a four-year-old or a five-year-old will never ask that really obscure question.
Good point. Good point. That makes perfect sense. And I never, to be fair, I never liked when he said that. But he said it so often. I was like, he couldn't have invented that, and I was right.
Yep.
Well, hey, let me summarize what we've talked about so far, and then give you a chance to talk about what you're doing lately or currently. But so first off, knowledge is not power. I love that. Steve's three-step process to make habits stick. Listen for the action item, make it personal, and don't do everything all at once. And then learn it to teach it, and focus on depth over breadth.
Yep.
Instead of casting a wide net, cast a deep hook.
Right.
So what's up with you, Lydia? Tell our audience about what you're doing these days. How can folks get in touch with you? You still doing trade shows, Facebook, internet?
Well, in essence, I'm dealing with what everybody else in the industry is dealing with of, wow, times they are a-changing. Well, I've been told, I don't know, I've been in this business since 1996. I've been told, you should go out on your own. And I was always, no, I was very reluctant to do it. And I said, you know what? If I was ever going to do it, now's the time to go do it. Fortunately, I don't know. I mean, I guess you're an example of this. I guess I have a pretty good reputation that's out there because you called me asking me to be on your podcast.
Absolutely. So
I have a nice network. I think I have a good reputation. People tend to like my presentation. So I've been blessed and lucky. I haven't had to do a cold calling and things of that nature. It's been really, and I say this to LOs all the time, work your CRM. Your CRM doesn't work for you. You leverage the CRM, right? That's what we need to do. Don't let that replace you. So I'm going through my database because your CRM is only as good as your database is. And I'm going through my database. I'm going, oh my gosh, Mark, how you doing? We haven't talked in a while. Here's what's happening in my life. Boom, boom. Oh, well, I have a podcast now. Okay, well, let's do a podcast together. So I'm doing a lot of podcasts. I'm doing a lot of in-person presentations for both mortgage companies, lenders. I'm doing a lot in front of real estate agents. Different mortgage companies are taking me in front of their customers, their lenders. I'm doing a ton of association work and conference work, which is great. I love it. And I am doing some consulting. So I have one person that says, oh, will you help me create a YouTube series that we can do so we can do video podcasts together and put that out there? Absolutely. I have another one that says, can you help us with our marketing? Okay, I'll help you with the marketing. So I have someone else who's asking me, can you write articles for a magazine? I can do that. So yes, I'm going all over I wouldn't say all over the place, but I am trying to get the message out there in as many formats and ways as possible.
So how can folks get in touch with you? Where's the best way to find you?
919-368-4301. That's my phone number. You can also, I'm a big LinkedIn guy. I'm a big Facebook guy. I'm just starting on Instagram. I'm taking courses of it. If somebody can teach an old man like me how to do Instagram, I'll be able to teach somebody else how to use Instagram.
I hear sexy photos work very well.
It's funny. I said that to my person who's training me on this. I said, well, I'm not trying to be mean, but I have to have awesome content because I don't have good looks. So I got to make sure that I'm coming up with something better than just my pretty face. So that's where I am working with her. But if you want to contact me, I'm on Facebook, LinkedIn. It's Steve Richman. I'm not like Virginia. I'm like what I hope to be. Richman.
Love it. Love it. Steve Richman. So I'll make sure and put all of that information in our show notes so folks can get a hold of you. And I would say to the audience, if you've got a team of salespeople, loan officers, real estate agents who are singing the blues and want some good ideas and an action plan and a three-step plan to put them into action, Steve Richman is your man.
Thank you much, Mr. Hammond. I appreciate that. I'll take any plug I can get.
Well, thank you for being a part of Innovation Radio, Steve, and appreciate your time, man.
Have a great day.
You too, sir.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Renovation Radio Podcast. Please help the show by following us and rating us on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please help us spread the word by sharing our podcast on your social media. The views, information, and opinions expressed on Renovation Radio are solely those of the individuals involved. Renovation Radio, because we're all a work in progress.